ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as Sean's Sports Stop, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion
on the biggest news stories in sports. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an emergency episode of the one and only Sean Sports Talk podcast. That's right, we have a lot to talk about. Holy shit, Odell Beckham Jr. has signed with a new team. But before I get into all that, really quickly, I want to thank Crimson IT for sponsoring today's podcast episode, and as well as Astro Death Crypto. Check them out. They're all about donating to victims and charities involved in the sickening Travis Scott concert, where he very bluntly kept performing while he saw dead bodies, while he saw people collapsing in the crowd. So Astro Death is all about being pro-victim and anti-Travis Scott. I have a lot of celebrities involved, influencers, so be on the lookout for that. Follow me on Instagram at Sean Hardtho. That's SEANHARDTHO. And yeah, I mean, if you enjoy the show, leave a 5-star review on iTunes, follow on Spotify, do the whole shebang. And with that said, let's get right into it, starting with some college football. Another week, another set of clues about who might ultimately make this year's college football playoff. One pretty major upset shook up the rankings quite a bit. While the top four shouldn't come as a major surprise, with Georgia continuing to lead the way, they're followed by Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State to round out the top four, and then Cincinnati, Michigan, Michigan State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Texas A&M, Wake Forest, BYU, Baylor, BYU, Ole Miss, NC State, Auburn, Wisconsin, Purdue, Iowa, Pittsburgh, San Diego State, UTSA, Utah, and Arkansas. So now let's analyze this list. There weren't a ton of shockers in the college football playoff committee's second iteration of the rankings. Georgia, as expected, obviously remained at number one following a 43-6 blowout over Missouri. It's hard to see the Bulldogs losing between now and the SEC championship game, with matchups against Tennessee at 5-4, Charleston Southern at 3-5, and Georgia Tech at 3-6 remaining. Anything can happen in college football, as we know, of course, but things appear to be headed toward a clash between number one Georgia and number two Alabama in the SEC championship game. What a game that's going to be. The Crimson Tide have a gimme against New Mexico State, who are at 1-8, before tougher matchups with number 25 Arkansas at 6-3, and the Iron Bowl versus number 17 Auburn, who are also 6-3. Granted, Alabama was not exactly impressive themselves in a 20-14 win over the struggling LSU Tigers, who are at 4-5 on Saturday. Quote, "I think there are a lot of things in the game that we probably didn't do well," head coach Nick Saban told reporters after the game. "We didn't block them up front really well. We didn't run the ball very well on offense. We couldn't run it at the end of the game when we needed to. We weren't as effective on third down. We had some protection issues. A lot of things that we can fix, and I think we need to fix them so we can be a little more consistent." So as Kevin Ngandi noted, Alabama's streak of scoring at least 30 points in 34 straight games came to an end, only scoring 20 against LSU, but they did get the 6-point win. For now, it would appear Saban is more concerned with those deficiencies than the College Football Playoff Committee, because they will almost certainly make the playoffs. With Michigan State losing to Purdue on Saturday, dropping the Spartans out of the top four, the question became which team would move up the rankings. While neither Oregon nor Ohio State was particularly impressive last week, they were the logical choices to move up a spot. So much of how the College Football Playoff rankings will ultimately shake out is tied up in what is becoming a very intriguing three-team race in the Big Ten East, where Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan are all 8-1, respectively. Ohio State has still yet to play both teams in the final 2 weeks of the season, meaning that whichever team, if any, survives the gauntlet will have a very, very good shot of making the college football playoff as well, assuming that the team also wins the Big Ten title. Cincinnati was also a huge topic of conversation following their number 6 ranking last week, with many people feeling the undefeated Bearcats should be higher, but a 28-20 victory over 3-6 Tulsa likely didn't help their cause much. So yeah, that's the college football playoff rankings. Now let's switch gears to some baseball. I'm going to be predicting the shortstop market. It is absolutely loaded, so let's get right into it. How the dominoes fall on a loaded free agent shortstop class is sure to be one of the biggest storylines of the 2021-22 MLB offseason. Carlos Correa and Corey Seager are the headliners of free agency this winter, but they are far from the only impact players searching for new contracts, with former All-Stars Javier Baez and Trevor Story also looking for new homes, as well as shortstop-turned-second baseman Marcus Semien. Veterans Andrelton Simmons, Jose Iglesias, and Freddy Galvez round out this year's shortstop class, and each of those players is also a candidate for an MLB deal, even if it's of the one-year variety. So Domino 1. I think Javier Baez will re-sign with the New York Mets. He made it clear where he wanted to play if the Cubs decided to go in a different direction. Quote, if I go to the free agency, I would like to play with Francisco Lindor, he told Mega 106.9 in July. I love playing with him in the World Classic. It is the only option I would take to play second base if it is to play with him. Otherwise, I stay playing at shortstop. He ended up getting his wish even earlier than expected, as a few days later, after he made those comments, he was traded to the Mets as part of the Cubs fire sale. The change of scenery jump-started his season, and he hit .299, .371, .515 with 1.9 WAR in 47 games with the Mets following the trade. That could have paved the way for a long-term relationship, and I think it did. Quote, obviously, some technical difficulties here. I was reading Baez's quote. He said, I obviously don't like the traffic. I don't like the cold, he told Gordon Wittenmeyer of NBC Sports Chicago in September. But if they make the offer and they make it happen, I would love to stay in New York. So here's assuming the Mets do in fact make it happen and that things move quickly so the team can turn its attention to rebuilding the rest of the team. And I think the contract will be something along the lines of 3 years, $72 million. Domino 2, I think Carlos Correa leaves the Astros and signs, wait for it, with the Detroit Tigers. I know it sounds crazy. As the clear-cut number one free agent in the 2021-22 class, Carlos Correa does not need to wait around for anyone else to set the market. He's only 27 years old. His track record, power production, defensive ability, and postseason experience all make him a prime candidate to be the next member of the exclusive $300 million club, and I believe he will be. And while the uncertainty of the new collective bargaining agreement could mean a slow-moving offseason overall, Correa could be one of the first names off the board once things finally do get rolling. The Detroit Tigers are a young team on the rise, ready to make a splashy move that effectively pivots them from rebuilding to contending. Think like the Chicago Cubs signing John Lester prior to the 2015 offseason. They ultimately ended up winning the 2016 World Series. While the Tigers have some good young arms to build around, a quality third baseman in Jaime Candelario and uber prospect Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green knocking on the door, there's nothing remotely resembling a long-term answer at shortstop in the organization. In 2021, a combination of Nico Goodrum, Zach Short, Harold Castro, Willie Castro, and Isaac Paredes manned the position, and the Tiger shortstops ranked 28th in combined value, according to Fangraphs. I mean, that's third worst. Correa's ties to former Houston Astros manager and current Tigers manager AJ Hinch have been pointed out frequently, and it's as logical a reason as ever to believe that Correa could favor a move to Detroit to be the centerpiece of what that team is building. So I think they would lock him in with a contract something along the lines of 10 years and $350 million. Next up, here's a huge move. I think Corey Seager will leave the bright lights of LA and go to the bright lights of New York. Once the Carlos Correa domino falls, the New York Yankees might feel an increased sense of urgency to address their own hole at the shortstop position. Gleyber Torres has been a huge defensive liability at minus 24 DRS at the position throughout his career, and he was finally shifted back to second base down the stretch. Third baseman Gio Urshela moved to shortstop following the change, and the team could conceivably go with that middle infield combination next season, slotting DJ LeMahieu at third base. However, after a disappointing early exit from the postseason, expect the Yankees to aim higher, and getting Corey Seager would do just that. Despite missing 65 games with a fractured hand last season, Seager was a 3.7 WAR player in 95 games, hitting .306, .394, .521 for a .145 OPS plus with 41 extra base hits in over 400 plate appearances. He has also been a steady defender throughout his career despite his limited range, and his bat would play at third base if a shift became necessary late in the contract. I mean, don't forget, he was the NLCS and World Series MVP for the 2020 World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers. With the Yankees unlikely to target Correa given the bad blood from 2017 and the front office soured on Trevor Story as a potential fit, according to Brian Hodge of Talking Yanks, Seager is looking more and more like their number one target this offseason, and I think they'll offer him something along the lines of $256 million over 8 years. Next up, I think Trevor Story is going to go to the Texas Rangers. Of the big, quote-unquote, big four shortstops, Trevor Story seems to be the most likely to be waiting out the rest of the market for a variety of reasons. Despite what guys like DJ LeMahieu and Nolan Arenado have proved in recent years, it's still tough to look at Story's home road splits and not be a bit concerned with his ability to produce at a high level without playing half of his games at Coors Field. Here's a look at his career splits. At home, in 375 games, he's hitting .303, .369, .603 with 216 extra base hits, 95 home runs, and a strikeout rate of 24.7%. On the road, he has 5 less games. His batting average went from .303 to .241. OPS from or on-base percentage from .369 to .310, and slugging from .603 all the way down to .442. He has about 70 less extra base hits. He has 30 less home runs and a strikeout rate is 6% higher. So it's obvious that the Coors Field advantage is real for Trevor Story. The 28-year-old is also coming off an up-and-down season in 2021, and while he finished strong, his 103 OPS plus is still represented as significant as a huge step back from the 123 OPS plus that he had over the previous three seasons. So yeah, I mean, the Rangers lost 102 games in 2021 and have work to do on the rebuilding front, but after trading Joey Gallo to the Yankees, they need a new face of the franchise to help put butts in the seats in their new stadium, and I think, I mean, incumbent shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is versatile, but Trevor Story is different. I think they'll offer him over $100 million over 5 years. I think Andrelton Simmons will sign with the Houston Astros. The Houston Astros made Carlos Correa a very respectable offer of $160 million over 5 years earlier this month, but I don't think he's going to take it. That said, the better course of action might be a veteran shortstop. Jeremy Peña, one of the team's top prospects, missed significant time with a wrist injury that he suffered at the alternate training site, but he returned in time to hit 287, 346, 598 with 10 home runs in 30 games with at AAA. MLB prospect rankings ranked him as the best defender in the Houston system, and his offensive upside is definitely clear. A bit more seasoning in the upper levels of the minor leagues would be beneficial, but the 24-year-old could be ready to take over as a starter by midseason next year. That makes slick fielding veteran Andrelton Simmons the perfect short-term solution to plugging the hole at shortstop. The 32-year-old hit 223 with a 57 OPS plus playing on a one-year deal with the Minnesota Twins in 2021, but he still was a 1.4 WAR player on the strength of his elite defense. So I think he'll get a nice little contract of $7.5 million for 1 year from the Astros. Next up, I think Marcus Semien takes his talents to the Philadelphia Phillies. He bet on himself when he took a one-year, $18 million contract, pillow contract from the Toronto Blue Jays last offseason, and that bet is going to pay off huge dividends this winter. The 31-year-old is now poised for his second third-place finish in AL MVP voting in the last 3 years after being named a finalist alongside teammate Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and likely winner Shohei Ohtani. He set the single-season home run record by a second baseman with 45 home runs, and he also set career highs in RBIs with 109, steals with 15, and total bases with 351, while leading the majors with 86 extra base hits in a 7.2 WAR season, so he was absolutely insane. The question now is whether or not he will stay at second base where he just won a Gold Glove Award, or if he will shift back to shortstop where he played most of his career prior to 2021. He was an above-average defender at shortstop during his time with the Oakland A's, and there are enough teams in need of an upgrade at that position that he should be able to shift back if that's his preference this offseason. It would likely further boost his earning power as well. The Phillies have already made it clear that Didi Gregorius will not simply be handed the starting shortstop job again after a disappointing 2021 season. With Gene Segura capable of handling either middle infield spot, the team could sign Semien and then sort out who plays where during spring training. So I think he'll get over $100 million, maybe a 4 or 5 year contract from the Phillies. I think Jose Iglesias signs with the Minnesota Twins. Once the big names are off the board, the remaining teams in need of shortstops help will likely turn their attention to a pair of steady veterans in Jose Iglesias and Freddy Galvis. The Astros, Phillies, Rangers, Tigers, and Yankees have already been addressed in this hypothetical, leaving the Los Angeles Angels and Minnesota Twins as two teams still searching for help. In theory, the Twins only need a short-term stopgap, with 2017 number one overall pick Royce Lewis still viewed as the shortstop of the future. And that's the approach they took last offseason when they signed Andrelton Simmons to a one-year deal worth $10.5 million. Iglesias is 31 years old. He's had a forgettable start to the season with the Angels after coming over in a trade with the Baltimore Orioles in December. He was released on September 3rd, but caught on a few days later with the Boston Red Sox. The late signing meant he was ineligible to play in the playoffs, but he hit 356, 406, 508 with 6 extra base hits and 64 plate appearances. So I think he'll get like a cool $5 million for 1 year. And lastly, I think Freddy Galvis goes to the Angels. He's been a very quiet producer throughout his 10-year career. Freddy Galvis should be able to secure another guaranteed MLB deal this offseason after signing a one-year, $1.5 million contract with the Orioles last winter. He hit 242 with 15 doubles, 14 home runs, and 40 RBIs in almost 400 plate appearances in 2021 after a solid start to the year with the Baltimore Orioles. He took over as the team's starting shortstop while also seeing sporadic action at third base. With a pair of 20 homer seasons on Galvis's resume, there's enough offensive upside to give him a shot. I think he'll get maybe $2 million for a one-year contract. But yeah, that's just me. Enough about shortstops. We are about 14 minutes into the episode. Let's switch gears. There's an update on Nikola Jokic and the whole situation with Markieff Morris. Reigning NBA MVP Nikola Jokic has been disciplined by the league for his actions against Markieff Morris in Monday's game against the Miami Heat. Per the NBA announcement, Jokic was suspended for one game while Morris was fined $50,000 for a flagrant 2 foul prior to Jokic's retaliation. Jimmy Butler was also fined $30,000 for attempting to escalate and instigate the altercation. So that's pretty much it. That's the update. Both or all three, Jokic, Markieff Morris, and Jimmy Butler have been disciplined. Now switching gears to college basketball. College hoops are back. Duke played Kentucky, and the number 9 Duke Blue Devils started off the season with a huge 79-71 win over the number 10 Kentucky Wildcats at Madison Square Garden in the 11th annual Champions Classic on Tuesday. Trevor Keels had 25 points to lead the Blue Devils. Paolo Banchero added 22 points and 7 rebounds. The Wildcats have now started the season at 0-1 for the first time since 2018-19, also losing their season opener to Duke that year. Oscar Tshiebwe had a team-high 17 points and 19 rebounds. It was the first game of Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski's farewell season. The Wildcats still lead the all-time series 12-11, but he can take comfort in the fact that he won his potential final battle of the Blue Bloods. So, yeah, I mean, first game of the season, Duke gets the win over Kentucky. So, that is huge. Let's see, what do we got now? We got Dalvin Cook. I mean, what a weird situation he is in. I don't even know what's up, but it's just strange. So, let's see. Minnesota Vikings running back Dalvin Cook and his former girlfriend, U.S. Army Sergeant First Class Gracelyn Trimble, are filing lawsuits against each other stemming from an altercation at his home in November 2020. So, it gets spicy. Cook's agent, Zach Hiller, said his client is the victim of domestic abuse and extortion and that litigation is pending regarding the allegations, per Adam Schefter. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk spoke with Hiller, who detailed the allegations from Cook's end, saying, quote, "Roughly a year ago, someone unlawfully entered Cook's house. The female who did it is a sergeant in the U.S. military, attacked Cook in his home while he had a guest present. The invader then allegedly tried to extort Cook for millions of dollars, claiming that she suffered injuries during the course of the attack that she allegedly initiated. Because she allegedly entered Cook's house illegally, he had the right to defend himself as authorized by Minnesota's version of the Castle Doctrine. Litigation per Hiller has not yet been commenced, but it's in the process of being initiated. No criminal complaints have been filed in connection with the incident." Per Schefter, Hiller said Trimble allegedly used a stolen garage door opener to enter the home before attacking Cook and a guest. Military Sergeant maced Cook directly in his eyes immediately upon illegally entering. Trimble spoke with Rochelle Olson of the Star Tribune and provided her account of what happened, saying Cook gave her a concussion, left a scar on her face, and took her, quote, through hell. In a lawsuit filed with Dakota County District Court, Trimble says Cook physically abused her and held her hostage at his home in Invergrove Heights, south of St. Paul, Minnesota. Per Olson and Gosling, Trimble wants unspecified monetary damages and, quote, accountability. Trimble and her lawyer Daniel Craig spoke with Cook and his attorney David Valentini about a potential settlement before the lawsuit was filed. The two sides, obviously, to no one's surprise, did not come to an agreement, and Cook received the lawsuit on Tuesday. Trimble's account of the events are as follows and start with her entering Cook's home through the garage and grabbing mace she stored there. That's strange. Quote, Trimble claims in the filing that Cook got angry when she asked for his help in gathering her things. Cook grabbed her arm and slung her whole body over the couch, slamming her face into the coffee table and causing her lower forehead and the bridge of her nose to bust open. She attempted to spray the mace at Cook, but he overpowered her and the mace went into her eyes, the lawsuit said. She went to shower when she was allegedly assaulted again. Then Trimble went into the bedroom, grabbed Cook's gun, and called her friend, according to the lawsuit. Cook overheard her and threatened her and beat her with a broomstick. Okay, hold on. If she had a gun and she's a sergeant in the U.S. Army, how did he beat her with a broomstick? Why didn't she just shoot him? I mean, maybe she was scared, but that's a little strange to me. The lawsuit includes an alleged text Cook sent to Trimble stating, quote, "I know what I did can't be rewind. If you want to go to the police, I'll respect that. I'll take my punishment for what I did." I mean, if he texted that, that's pretty implicatory, if that's what I mean. That he kind of implicated himself, I would say. Olson tweeted images of the reported text conversation between Cook and Trimble. So Cook was previously charged with a misdemeanor battery after he was accused of hitting a 21-year-old woman in 2015 outside a bar in Tallahassee, Florida, while he played for Florida State. He was found not guilty in the jury trial. The 26-year-old has played all 5 of his NFL seasons for the Vikings, who selected him with the number 41 overall pick in the 2017 NFL draft. He leads all Vikings players with 106.5 scrimmage yards per game this season. He has 639 total yards and a pair of touchdowns. I don't even know where to start. I don't know who's lying, who's not, so I'm just gonna hold off on commenting. But we got some more baseball to talk about. It might be a long offseason for Major League Baseball and its players. With the current collective bargaining agreement set to expire on December 1st, the league and the Players Association will have to negotiate a new one prior to the 2022 season if the season is going to happen on time. However, John Heyman of MLB Network cited a management source who said the negotiations are, quote, as bad as I've ever seen it. The source also predicts 2.5 months of pain are ahead. The last work stoppage for the MLB happened in 1994 with a strike that prevented the World Series. There were a number of contested negotiations surrounding the shortened 2020 season because of COVID-19, including the length of the season, whether players would receive prorated salaries, and health and safety protocols. A work stoppage may be in store this time around. Ronald Bloom of the Associated Press reported the league's ninth work stoppage, quote, appears almost certain to start on December 2nd when the current system in place expires. The looming reality will surely impact the free agent market this offseason as notable players like Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, Freddie Freeman, Max Scherzer, Marcus Semien, and Chris Bryant hit the open market. From the team's perspective, they may be more hesitant to grant pricey contracts without fully knowing what a potential luxury tax threshold will be in 2022. From the players' perspective, having something like a payroll floor may encourage more teams to bid for players and drive up contract offers. Bloom noted the teams have proposed a lower luxury threshold and a payroll floor, although players have traditionally been against floors because they believe it will be a slippery slope toward an eventual salary cap. Teams also proposed for the luxury tax threshold to be lowered from $210 million to $180 million. Yet the Players Association pointed out that the average major league player or salary for 2021 is projected to be $3.9 million, which is lower than the $4.1 million figure in 2017. It appears that both sides remain quite far apart. I just want there to be a season personally. That's all I really care about. Now switching gears to the NBA, Damian Lillard has struggled this offseason, but he is coming at someone else. Portland Trailblazers point guard Damian Lillard says the way NBA referees have called fouls this season is, quote, unacceptable. Lillard, who shot only one free throw in Tuesday's 117-109 loss to the Los Angeles Clippers, said after the game, he's surprised the changes to how rules are enforced have impacted the game so much. Quote, I feel like the way the game is being officiated is unacceptable. The six-time All-Star told reporters, I felt like coming in, the rule change wouldn't affect me because I don't trick the referees. I don't do the trick plays. It's unacceptable. Lillard is averaging only 3.2 free throw attempts per game through 11 appearances this season. He went to the line 7.2 times per game last season, and his career average in that category stands at 6.1. The 2013 NBA Rookie of the Year is not the only player who's found it more difficult to draw foul calls, especially on plays that would lead to free throws. Brooklyn Nets star James Harden, who averages almost 9 free throw attempts for his career, is down to 4.6 this season. In October, Harden said he felt the rush to adhere to the changes has led some officials to swing the pendulum too far the other way and thus miss obvious foul calls, saying, quote, yes, for sure, but I'm not the type to complain about it. I just ask every official if they see a foul, call a foul. Sometimes I feel like coming into a game, it's already predetermined or I already have that stigma of getting foul calls, but I just ask officials to call what they see. I can't stop playing basketball. I mean, a foul is a foul no matter what league it is, but it's bigger. I've got to play better, obviously. That's it. Although the chief focus coming into the season was eliminating calls where offensive players tried to create contact to force a foul, the change has also created a gray area between those situations and actual fouls, especially on drives toward the basket. That is what it is. Now we got more baseball to talk about. More baseball. There have been some rumors of Shohei Ohtani possibly leaving the Angels, but it's not looking like that will happen. The agent for Los Angeles Angels star Shohei Ohtani declined to specify whether the MVP finalist has discussed a new contract with the team. Nez Bilelo did, however, tell reporters his client is, quote, extremely happy in Anaheim. He went on to praise the vision of Angels general manager Perry Minassian, saying, quote, I was with Perry yesterday, and I know one of the things that he's really set out to do is to put together a competitive team. He is all about it, and I think that's wonderful. They're really close to being a really dynamic team. I don't know. They just need pitching. That's all they're missing. They have Anthony Rendon, Shohei Ohtani, and Mike Trout. Ohtani has one more year of arbitration before hitting free agency in 2024. Based on his performance in 2021, he might become one of the highest paid players in MLB. I mean, he had 46 home runs, 100 RBIs, and a .592 slugging percentage while posting a 3.18 ERA and striking out 156 batters over 130 innings. His two-way dominance is something that we haven't seen since literally Babe Ruth. So it's honestly shocking to see. We got basketball to talk about. The Golden State Warriors, as I said yesterday when I was talking about how Curry dropped 50 points against the Hawks, are looking lethal. And they may be getting shooting guard Klay Thompson back before Christmas Day, according to Woj of ESPN. He said, quote, I'm told if he continues on his current course right now in rehab, that a target date for his return will be set probably within the next couple of weeks, and it could be. There's optimism. It could be as soon as December 20th, December 23rd. The Warriors have home games before Christmas, and so the plan for Klay Thompson is to continue to ramp up. The Warriors will go on a road trip in mid-December, and at that point, if Klay continues on his track, he'd go down and play with the Warriors G League team, and the idea is, and the hope is, they'll have him back perhaps prior to Christmas. He obviously suffered a torn ACL in Game 6 of the 2019 NBA Finals. That kept him out for the entire 2019-20 season. He then suffered a torn Achilles during a November 18th, 2020 workout. That sidelined him for the 2020-21 season. So he's been out for over 2 years now. Regarding the dates that Woj noted for a possible return, the Warriors will host the Sacramento Kings on the 20th of December before welcoming the Memphis Grizzlies into town on the 23rd. And they will visit the Phoenix Suns on Christmas Day. But it looks like they want Klay to return at home before Christmas. Let's see. Oh, we got some drama. Kyle Kuzma is feeling it. He is feeling it all right. Kyle Kuzma appears determined to join Joakim Noah on the shortlist of Cleveland's most hated athletes. The Washington Wizards forward had a back and forth with fans during Wednesday's win over the Cleveland Cavaliers, saying Cleveland, quote, wouldn't be shit without LeBron James. They had a sign that said LeBron won Kuzma his ring. I said, you know, without LeBron, Cleveland wouldn't be shit. They chose violence. I just kept going. And I, bro, respect Kuz. I mean, he didn't start anything. He just clapped back. Kuzma scored 22 points, including a go-ahead three-pointer with 11.4 seconds left in the game, as the Wizards came from behind for a 97-94 victory over the Cavs. Cleveland is no stranger to being on the crosshairs of trash talk from NBA players. Joakim Noah famously said the city, quote, sucks, and later doubled down saying, quote, I never heard anybody says I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. What's so good about Cleveland? Kuzma's next visit to Cleveland is February 26th, so we'll have to see if he will double down again when the Wizards visit in February. The Chicago Bulls are looking really nice. But Chicago Bulls center Nikola Vucevic is expected to miss multiple games after being placed into the NBA's health and safety protocols. Woj reported the news. If Vucevic tested positive for COVID-19, NBA protocols will call for him to miss at least 10 days of action or have two negative PCR tests 24 hours apart. The 31-year-old could miss at least 5 games, including the team's upcoming West Coast trip, if he's out for 10 days. He's averaging a double-double with 13.6 points, 11 rebounds, and 4.5 assists for the upstart Bulls, who are currently tied for the aforementioned Washington Wizards for the best record in the East at 8-3. Tony Bradley is the backup center, but has seen very minimal playing time this season. Second-year big man Patrick Williams has already been ruled out for 4 to 6 months with a wrist injury. Bradley and Elise Johnson stand out to see an increased playing time with Vucevic out. So Vucevic is huge for the Bulls, obviously. Now switching gears to football. Cam Newton is coming home. He's found a new home, but it's one that he's very familiar with. The Carolina Panthers announced they are bringing back the veteran quarterback pending the results of a physical. Per The Athletic, Newton will sign a one-year deal with the Panthers. It's noted that the deal is worth up to $10 million with $4.5 million fully guaranteed and a $1.5 million roster bonus. Panthers head coach Matt Rhule told reporters that PJ Walker would start Sunday despite the signing, but Cam Newton is back. Jonathan Alexander of the Charlotte Observer reported earlier in the day that Newton was in Charlotte to meet with Panthers brass, including Rhule, owner David Tepper, and vice president of football operations Stephen Drummond. This marks Newton's return to the NFL after he was released by the New England Patriots on August 31st. The Patriots opted to go with Mac Jones, who was selected with the number 15 overall pick of this year's NFL draft as their starting quarterback. Quote, I really appreciate all the love and support during this time, but I must say, please don't feel sorry for me. Hashtag I'm good, he posted on his Instagram story after the news broke. So Cam first entered the league as the number one overall pick after being a dynamic quarterback for Auburn in the 2011 draft and quickly established himself as the face of the Panthers as the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in his first season. He made 3 Pro Bowls in his first 5 seasons and capped off that run with a league MVP and Super Bowl appearance during the 2015 season. While the Panthers lost to the Denver Broncos that year in the Super Bowl, that season was definitely the high point of his career as he went 15-1 as a starter during the 2015 season, but he went down to 6-8 in 2016. He also finished with a 6-8 record in 2018 and appeared in only 2 games in 2019 because of injuries. The 2015 season was his last Pro Bowl selection, so it's been downhill since then. The Panthers released him prior to the 2020 season, and he joined the Patriots. Newton struggled in his only season with the Patriots. He had 2,657 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, but 10 interceptions. It was the first time in his career that he threw for fewer than 3,100 yards, excluding his injury-shortened 2019 season. At this point, Cam is past his prime at 32 years old, and he's not as effective as he once was running the ball. But the Panthers desperately needed a quarterback, with Sam Darnold likely to miss several weeks with a crack in his right shoulder scapula. Newton could potentially take over as the starter in Week 11 against the Washington football team at home, depending on what role Rule wants to fill. The Panthers have lost 5 of their past 6 games after starting the season 3-0. They rank 26th in the NFL in scoring offense with 19 points a game, but Cam Newton is back. And now the biggest story of the day. The biggest story of the day, the reason why I'm doing this emergency episode, Odell Beckham Jr. has agreed to join the Los Angeles Rams. The wideout told Kim Jones of NFL Network. The team also confirmed the deal. It's a one-year contract. This comes after Adam Schefter of ESPN reported Beckham was finalizing a contract with Los Angeles, though the receiver had told Jones and NFL reporter Josina Anderson that he had been, quote, on the fence between the Rams and Green Bay Packers. Jeff Duncan also reported the New Orleans Saints, quote, made a strong run at the wideout, but it was not enough. The Seahawks were also interested. Odell's 3-year tenure with the Cleveland Browns rapidly reached its conclusion following a Week 9 loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but his departure from the organization was a long time in the making. The 3-time Pro Bowl wide receiver requested a trade, quote, multiple times dating back to the offseason and he asked again after making only one catch for 6 yards against the Steelers per Cleveland.com. On the day of the 2021 NFL trade deadline, the wideout's father, Odell Beckham Sr., posted an 11-minute Instagram video showcasing plays where his son was open but did not get the ball, which appeared to fracture their relationship for good. Odell Jr. reposted that, subsequently deleted it, but still. The Browns subsequently excused the 29-year-old LSU product from practice for 2 days before he was formally released after a Week 9 clash with the Cincinnati Bengals. He cleared waivers before hitting the free agent market. The GM, Andrew Berry, released a statement saying that they basically don't want anything to do with Odell anymore. So he finishes his Browns tenure with 114 catches for almost 1,600 yards, 7 touchdowns in 29 games. He recorded 390 receptions for almost 6,000 yards and 44 scores in 59 games across 5 years with the New York Giants prior to start his career. His receiving yards per game dropped from 92.8 in New York to only 54.7 in Cleveland. Now the question is whether he'll be able to turn that around with the Rams. I mean, the Rams have a super team. They add Odell Beckham Jr. to an offense that includes Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Van Jefferson, Tyler Higbee, Daryl Henderson Jr., Cam Akers is going to come back. The defense includes Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Leonard Floyd, Taylor Rapp, Jordan Fuller, Von Miller. I mean, it is insane. The Rams, it's Super Bowl or bust. This is unbelievable. LeBron James has already welcomed Odell to LA, saying, quote, welcome to LA, my brother, at OBJ, it's go time. This is insane. LA sports have been on a tear in the last couple of years. The Lakers have signed LeBron James, traded for Anthony Davis, traded for Russell Westbrook, signed Carmelo Anthony, signed Dwight Howard again. The Dodgers traded for Mookie Betts and David Price, traded for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, signed Trevor Bauer, Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler, the Rams, obviously, Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford, in recent years, DeSean Jackson. So LA Sports, you have Chicharito for the LA Galaxy. LA Sports have had so much star power. Even the other teams like the Clippers, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, the Chargers, Justin Herbert, the Angels, Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon. There is so much star power in LA Sports right now, whether it's, you know, the good teams like the Lakers, Dodgers and Rams, or the off-brand teams like the Angels, Clippers and Chargers. But ladies and gentlemen, this is all I have for this episode of Sean Sports Hub. This was number 357, an emergency episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love all you guys. And with that, Mamba out.